Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed on AM 360 by the host, hostesses, or guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the community-wide Shure Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific and personal medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to consult an advisor for your specific circumstances.
You are part of our 600,000 listening level, American Muslim 360.
That's interesting.
Assalamu alaikum. This is American Muslim 360 radio broadcast.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillah.
Masha, if you can put everyone. So this week, you know that our topic is on grant writing. And grant writing is a, it allows us to access monies in America that's designed or dedicated to expanding and building organizational capacity. We have two exceptionally talented sisters that I've worked with, both of them, for years, and I regard the work and services that they've provided this community in with high regards. And so without any further ado, I'm going to introduce Sister Bathsheba. And Sister Bathsheba, if you could just briefly share with the community some of your background before we get into your PowerPoint.
Absolutely. Happy to. Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and good morning. Happy Sunday to you. My name is Bathsheba Philpott, and I'm a member of Masjid Muhammad here in Washington, D.C. I am a fundraising professional. I've been doing this work for 20-plus years. I'm currently at a higher ed association here in D.C., and I lead a small team. I've been also previously at the Smithsonian, George Washington University, and a think tank, and a small environmental nonprofit as well. My primary expertise is on corporate and foundation fundraising, so that's grants and sponsorships, but I've also worked with individual donors. I've done annual fund work, crowdsourcing, et cetera. So my sort of experience in the field is relatively broad, but again, my primary expertise is on corporate and foundation development, as well as some government work as well. So with that said, I'm going to jump right in. I know we've got a lot to cover this morning. So I wanted to start with just a snapshot of philanthropy in the U.S. So you'll see, based on 2021 data, giving in the U.S. totaled almost $485 billion. So how that breaks out in terms of where those dollars come from, you'll see individuals make up the largest share of charitable giving in the U.S. Bequest, again, those are also from individual donors. So taken together, you're looking at 76% of contributions across the U.S. coming from individual donors. So that's high net worth individuals, that's, you know, folks in the middle of the spectrum, as well as individuals sort of at the sort of lower end, if you will. So that's your, you know, $25 contributions all the way up to your $20 million, $25 million contributions. Foundations follow individual donors and make up about 19% of all charitable giving, followed by corporations. So corporations, you'll see, only totaled about 4% in 2021. I also wanted to share where those contributions go. So you'll see that religion leads in terms of where charitable dollars go. So think of tithing, right? So those donations that we make at our masjids, our place of worship, churches, the contributions that they receive, synagogues, et cetera. So that's all of that money makes up the largest share of charitable giving in the U.S., followed by education. So think about the gifts that you hear going to universities as an example, right? So we know a lot of large gifts. Think of your Harvard, your Stanford, your Yale, your Princeton, et cetera, of the world. A lot of money flow to those institutions, so they make up the second largest share. So I won't go down the list here, but I just wanted to, again, share where those dollars go, because I think that's an important thing for us to keep in mind as we're thinking about organizational capacity. So five critical questions. I wanted to highlight these because I think these are questions that should be top of mind for us as we're thinking about building organizational capacity. So what impact is your organization achieving with its mission? So that's a really important and critical question that any funder is going to ask, and that, you know, we need to articulate, particularly when we're sitting down to write a proposal or any type of solicitation. Why is the organization best positioned to do the work? So who's actually on your board? Who makes up your staff? What skill sets, experience do they have that aligns with the mission and the activities that your nonprofit organization is trying to achieve? What's the impact? Do you have a track record? So for example, if we're talking about a after-school program where we're serving young people, let's say K-12. So Masjid Muhammad here in DC has a weekend school program that's been running for about 9 years. So we have served at this point hundreds of students. We have graduated students from the program who've gone on to college, into careers, et cetera. So we've got at this point a really good track record that we can build upon. How can you engage those people and groups in the work as well? So we have, in the case again of the weekend school, we have a number of students who actually have come back to serve in the weekend school as volunteers. So we've got, again, a good track record. Again, just using that as one example. And then what are you doing to keep your investors engaged? So the weekend school, again, as one example, has had a number of community members donate over time. And so what we've done in past years is try to keep those donors abreast of the work that we're doing, the students that we're serving, the number of students, the age groups of those students, et cetera, and the impact of the weekend school as one example. So again, these are just five questions that we all need to be mindful of and thinking about as we are trying to go out and seek support for our nonprofit organization. So common fundraising strategies, I list many here. This list is not exhaustive. I have several on the next slide as well. So annual giving, so think of that as a charitable contribution. So Sister Fitra, to use you as an example, has been running Study Al-Islam for a number of years now, and from time to time solicits donations to be able to continue providing this valuable resource to our community. So the funds that she solicits, she does that over the course of, say, a year, and she re-solicits each year. So that would fall in the category of annual funds. Special events, those are your galas. We have a Time to Be Grateful coming up. It's another great example of a special event that we're leveraging as a community to seek support for the Muslim Journal. Other types are small cultivation events. If you've got board members that have connections to other individuals that you want to support your organization, asking them to host an event in their home or outside of their home is another good way to bring awareness to your organization and also to receive funds from those individuals as well. Major gifts are defined as your larger gifts. So annual fund, if you think of annual fund as your $25, $50, $100, $500 gifts, major gifts are gifts that actually have a larger budgetary impact on your organization. So in larger organizations, major gifts are often defined at about $25,000 to $50,000. For a smaller organization with a smaller budget, typically you might define a major gift as $2,500 or $5,000. Again, it just depends on, you know, your budget, your donor base, connections that you have, et cetera. Online giving and crowdfunding, I think, is something that we're all familiar with. We've all probably participate in GoFundMe campaigns and other efforts to raise support for individuals who are, who may need to cover burial or other types of expenses, for capital campaigns for our, you know, within our community and outside of our community, and other efforts as well. So that's your crowdfunding. Online giving, that typically can be done over email, pointing folks to your website, sending out appeals via email to solicit donations as well. Grants, we're going to talk a lot about grants because I know that when most of us think of capacity building, grants is the first thing that we think about. So I am going to spend a bit more time on grants. Sponsorship, so we typically think of sponsorships as coming from corporations, right? So if you've got vendors, if you've got companies that are located in your communities, if you've got relationships to business owners, that's where your sponsorships come in. So typically sponsorships are for events, you know, again, galas, thinking about a time to be grateful, which we have coming up in a few weeks. Masjid Muhammad is one example. When we had our 80th anniversary some years back, we're successful in soliciting and securing a number of sponsors for that event. And we, you know, built a nice sponsorship package for those companies and did a number of other efforts to secure their support. Lastly, in-kind donations. So in-kind donations, I wanted to be sure to highlight this one because I think it is critical to the work that we do. So in-kind donations are typically donations of goods or services, right? So goods, you know, let's again use A Time to Be Grateful as one example. We had a florist that was willing to donate flowers to that event, or we had a printer that was willing to do the printing for us at no or low cost. Those are examples of in-kind. Other types of in-kind contributions might include a lot of law firms and accounting firms will actually donate hours to nonprofit organizations to help, again, build capacity. So if you're looking at establishing a 501c3 or you need to do an annual audit or other activities, in some cases, some firms will donate hours to charitable organizations. So again, I do think in-kind can be really critical and important way to build capacity. So I wanted to highlight that one as well. So other things to consider, you know, if you've got a website, definitely having a donation page available on that website. A lot of organizations have also started to use text giving options. So you can send out appeals via text and have individuals donate to your organization via text. Fundraising appeals. Those can go out electronically or by paper. I think many of us have received lots of fundraising appeals over the years from organizations that we've supported in the past, or in cases where our names have been sold to other organizations that are doing similar work, we received appeals as well. Peer-to-peer fundraising, so this is where your board can come in handy, your staff, but thinking about individuals in your network that, you know, share similar values, et cetera, as you, and leveraging those relationships that you have to actually secure support. So think about colleagues, think about friends, think about family members, et cetera. And again, not everyone will be sort of at the major donor level, meaning that they can make a larger gift, but, you know, many of us can do a $25, $50, $100 gift. And again, you know, depending on the numbers of gifts at that level that you receive, they can have an impact. Recurring donations, so this can be an important strategy for individuals who can't make a large gift up front. If you have a mechanism in place where you can set up recurring giving options, so let's say $25 a month or $50 a month, whatever that amount might be, that can actually help to enable individuals to do more in terms of charitable giving than they might not be able to do in a single gift. So again, very, very important strategy there. Phone-a-thon, so calling is, I think, a nice way to engage individuals, to talk about the work that you're doing, to solicit them versus, you know, a electronic appeal or sending something via mail. I will say for me personally, phone calls are typically more impactful, so I usually get a call from my, you know, alma mater, University of Maryland, to give a charitable gift, and that tends to actually move me to give versus receiving, you know, an email or, you know, something in the mail. So again, I think that can be an important way and an impactful way to secure money. And then a membership program. So depending on the nature of your organization, so I mentioned that I work for a nonprofit here in DC. We're a membership organization for colleges and universities. So we have significant number of members across the country, HBCU members, community colleges, et cetera, and those members pay membership fees. The wonderful thing for us as an organization is that those membership fees are unrestricted dollars. So those dollars can cover everything from, building expenses, salaries, et cetera, et cetera. So they really provide a really great source of general support for our organization. So if you're in a position and your organization is set up in such a way where a membership program makes sense, I would actually recommend, thinking about establishing one, because again, it can be a great source of revenue. So cost per dollar raise, I want to quickly highlight this here just sort of as a way to get us thinking about where best to invest our time. So typically direct mail, the mail solicitations that we all receive via either snail mail or electronically can be a great way to solicit funds, but it's also costly, right? Because the return on the investment, as you see here, for every dollar raised, the typical cost of investment is about $125 to $150 if you're acquiring donors for the first time. If they're individuals who have given in the past, you'll see that the cost per dollar raise is typically about 20 to 25 cents on the dollar. And so on and so forth. Special events, while they can be impactful, they can be great ways to raise money, you'll see again that the cost per dollar raise tends to be high. Where you get sort of the most leverage, the most sort of impact, if you will, the greatest return on investment are things like your grants. Again, corporate foundations, you'll see it's only 20 cents per dollar raise. And again, this is a sort of aggregate number. This isn't true in cases where, let's say, it's a funder that supported you year after year for 5 years. And, the investment that you're making to prepare the grant proposal, et cetera, may be fairly minimal if it's someone that you've worked with over time. So maybe that cost per dollar raise goes down. Volunteer-led solicitations, et cetera, you'll see planned giving, online giving, et cetera, the cost per dollar tends to be fairly low. So again, this is just to sort of give you a glimpse of the impact and sort of where best to invest your time in terms of securing support. So finding prospects, I've listed here some resources. So grants, I've listed Candid. So Candid, I've worked with quite a bit. It's a great resource for finding foundations and companies. Grants.gov, that's your sort of go-to resource for government grant funding, particularly federal funding. Small Business Administration has some great resources as well, and I've listed a few others. I won't read these. I won't go through all of these in detail, but these do require subscriptions. That being said, most local libraries, if you don't want to pay the cost of the subscription, you can access these websites via your local library. So that's a great place to go if you need to do some prospecting. So say you've got a food bank or another program, let's say after school program, career development program, et cetera, and you're trying to determine, which funders might be amenable to supporting the organization or the program, these are great resources that you can use to determine and identify funders. Individual donors, again, if you have connections to people that you think can make a major gift, it would be worth investing in some research to determine, again, what their rating is in terms of their giving capacity, right? So there are actually tools out there that nonprofits use to determine if prospect A can make a gift of, say, $25,000 or $10,000 or $50,000, et cetera. So I've listed three here: LexisNexis, Wealth Engine, and Donor Search are three that nonprofits typically use. So for corporate sponsorships, the best resource that I found is simply the company's websites themselves. So this Candid website that I've mentioned initially is better for foundation prospecting, not as great for corporate. So corporate, I typically just go directly to the company's websites to try to determine what their sponsorship guidelines are and what their interest areas are. So leveraging grants, so I've listed here some ways that grant funding can be leveraged, again, to build capacity. So there are a number of foundations in particular that provide what are called capacity building grants. So capacity building grants allow you to do things like board development. Let's say you want to host a retreat for your board, you want to hire a consultant to come in to help with a strategic plan. So capacity building grant would be helpful for doing that work. Also for building staff, let's say you are in a place where you want to bring on a full-time fundraising professional and you don't have the resources to hire. Again, that's another way that you could leverage a capacity building grant. Things like staff training, if you have existing staff that you want to train to do other areas of work, let's say accounting or you know, things like fundraising, et cetera. Again, you can use capacity building grants for those. So other areas, I won't read all of these in the interest of time, but again, piloting new projects. So if you want to, let's say, implement a project that you haven't done before, a grant can be a good source for that. Community services, R&D, training and career development, education programs. Again, this list is not exhaustive. These are just some examples of ways that you can leverage grant support. So quickly, unrestricted and restricted grants. So unrestricted, just as its name says, are grants that essentially allow organizations to leverage the funds in whatever way they deem necessary for the overall support of the organization. So that could be for things like overhead, it could be for capacity building, et cetera, et cetera. Restricted grants, that's a grant that's given to an organization for a specific purpose. So say you've got an after-school program as one example. A funder may, if you receive a restricted grant for that purpose, then that means it can only be leveraged for that specific purpose. So getting grant funding, I talked a little bit about prospect research on the prior slide with those resources that I outlined. Letters of inquiry, in some cases, a funder will ask you to send a letter of inquiry as a first step. I also recommend exploratory phone calls where possible. So if you reach out to, let's say, a foundation or company as an example, or government as well, if there's a point of contact for a government grant, it's always a great idea to have a conversation up front to talk about the work, talk about your approach to the work, why you're best suited for it, and get their feedback and input before you actually send a proposal. So that's sort of a best practice. I typically don't send out any proposal without making some level of contact first. Let's see, so building a relationship piece. So soliciting, we'll talk a little bit more about in a second, and then stewarding. So stewarding is, you know, once you receive the grant, typically funders require that you report back on those funds, on the use of those funds. So you want to make sure that you're tracking the due dates for those reports, asking for advice as needed, and then making connections between renewals as well. So successful grant proposals align with the interests of the grant maker. So again, that's where doing that due diligence up front, using those resources that I highlighted earlier to do prospect research, understanding, you know, what the areas of focus are for the funder. You know, there's some funders that have a major focus around K-12 education. Others have focuses on, you know, entrepreneurship, health and human services, medical research. I mean, you name it. It runs the gamut. So before obviously submitting any proposal, you want to make sure that the interests align. Upfront buy-in, again, that's where I mentioned before the importance of doing outreach upfront, having a conversation with a program officer or other individual before submitting a proposal, ensuring that they're compelling, free of jargon, et cetera. Again, I won't go through these, but the idea is do your homework upfront. Ensure that the request is well-written, well-researched, and that there is strong alignment, and also making sure that you have mechanisms in place to effectively steward the funds once you receive those, which we can talk a little bit about in just a second. So corporate funding dues, do your homework, as I just mentioned. Approach it as a mutually beneficial partnership. So corporations, typically their motivations for giving are typically because they want to raise visibility of their brand, right? So let's say, you know, we're hosting an event, we're going to have 1,000 people there. It's a great way to get their brand in front of, you know, the group of, you know, the attendees. In terms of, it also helps to fulfill their corporate social responsibility goals, et cetera. So their motivations for giving typically are about the bottom line. So they're not altruistic necessarily in their giving. Look for opportunity to engage their employees. A lot of corporations also are interested in volunteer opportunities for their employees. So as one example, when I was working at Children's, we had a relationship with an insurance company. They gave us about $100,000 a year. And once a year, they actually, we allowed their employees to come in to do a play day with the kids who were hospitalized. And so that was a great way to engage their employees and, you know, the mission and the work, et cetera. Visibility, I think we've talked a little bit about already. So most companies are looking for visibility. So to the extent that you're able to showcase their logo at, let's say if it's an event, at the event, again, provide opportunities for their employees to volunteer and other mechanisms for creating visibility. They, again, really, really appreciate that. And then a corporate gift acceptance policy. So I'll just say a couple seconds on this one. So it is important to have a gift acceptance policy for corporate gifts, just to ensure that any gift that you're accepting is aligned with your own values as an organization. So for example, when I was at Children's Hospital, we did not accept gifts from tobacco companies, nor did we accept gifts from any person selling alcohol or firearms. So those are the three industries that we could not take any gift from. So I think, again, if you are looking at corporate fundraising, I would try to have some policy or guidelines in place around who you will and will not accept gifts from. So government do's and don'ts, obviously reading the guidelines, planning ahead. Government proposals do take a lot of time to prepare, as Kafi can attest to, and Vitra, and many of those who've worked on those for Masjid Muhammad, they do take a lot of time. Leveraging their language, and this would be true across the board, so whether it's a foundation proposal, corporate, et cetera, leveraging the language that they use to talk about the things that they're interested in is important. And then just reading the guidelines really thoroughly. A lot of government grant proposals are very prescriptive, so they have page limits, et cetera, so ensuring that you're sticking with all of those things. So other fundraising strategies, we talked a little bit about events. Seek sponsorships early. They typically don't turn around quickly. So if you've got an event that's, let's say, 3 to 4 months out, I would say start on your sponsorships really early. Leverage board and other volunteers. Remember that oftentimes our board members and other volunteers have relationships that we can leverage. They spend money with different businesses. They may have relationships through, you know, their jobs and other, you know, maybe through their universities, or if they're involved in a fraternity or sorority. Oftentimes, again, they have relationships that we can leverage. Annual fund, I think I talked about friends and family members or prospects too, so let's keep them in mind. If you've got a national reach, or you've got folks outside of your area that you can connect with as well to secure support, I would also think about those folks. Major gifts, we talked a little bit about already, and then in-kind services. So building awareness, I think, again, as we think about fundraising, it's important to build your brand, build community awareness of your organization, right? So the greater awareness, the greater brand visibility you have, oftentimes the more leverage and the more impact and the more successful you are in your fundraising efforts. So it is really, really, really important for us to be talking about the work that we do, for us to be sharing it, for us to be building partnerships on the ground. Things like cases for support. So oftentimes universities and other large organizations, when they're in fundraising campaigns, they develop what are called cases for support. That being said, the case for support can serve any purpose, right? It can also support your annual fund. It can support various types of fundraising activities. So I do think it's important to articulate, you know, the why of the work, the impact that you've had, et cetera, et cetera, and to have that information publicly available for individuals who are interested in supporting the organization and for your broader constituency. Website, again, that's the face of your organization, so making sure that information is articulated well on your website and you have a solid website. Things like emails, typically the organizations that I support, I receive emails from them probably monthly or at least every other month. So again, important to keep in contact with your constituents. Letters of inquiry, we talked a little bit about earlier. So letters of inquiry are typically a first stage proposal. So a lot of grant makers will say, rather than doing a full proposal up front, send us a letter. And that's a great way to introduce your organization and to get feedback on whether or not a proposal would make sense. And then fundraising events, we talked a little bit about earlier as well. So those are leveraging your board, volunteers, and others to host events and or large scale events as well to bring awareness to the work that your organization is doing. So key takeaways, crawl, walk, run, you know, it does take time to build, you know, a philanthropy program and secure resources. So allowing as much time as you can up front. And also understanding that, you know, it does, you know, it happens in stages, right? So it's rare that you see a nonprofit, a startup nonprofit, grow, you know, exponentially overnight. It does take time. It does take, you know, time to build your constituency. It does take time to get the word out. It does take time to build brand awareness. Infrastructure and other investments do help to drive philanthropy. So if you do have resources and you can bring on consultants or staff to help, you know, build your development program, that's always a good idea. And not all of us have those resources, but if you are fortunate to have those resources, it's definitely worth the investment. And commitment of time and resources. So if you're the CEO, executive director of a nonprofit, understanding that fundraising is an important part of your day-to-day, it's, you know, uncommon for any CEO or executive director not to invest time in fundraising. So understanding that you are the face of the organization, you are sort of a key ally with the board, you help to motivate the board, you help to motivate the staff, et cetera. So I will stop there and hopefully I didn't take up too much time. Oh, okay. So I didn't do too bad on time.
First of all, thank you, Bathsheba, for that excellent presentation. So let me just say this to everyone that's on the line. It's about 190 people on the line. We are going to go over a little. Because before we move into Coffee's presentation, which will provide us the application, the practical side of how to implement what Bathsheba just shared with us, I can't let Bathsheba off the hook right now because what she just presented was too valuable. Bathsheba, I need you to go back to the slide of the five questions to start with.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, I want to share with everyone on the line that I have had the privilege of working with some very, very talented people, Bathsheba and Coffee being two of them. And so what I'm sharing with you today is a way to help you to establish or reestablish or think about how to set up your masjid, how to set up your organization, how to set up your nonprofit. These questions that Bathsheba has presented here, now remember, this will be available to listen for an entire week in next week's newsletter. So even though we're rushing through this and Bathsheba could take another hour to present this kind of information, we're doing it in a very short period, but I have to bring a few things to your attention because for 10 years was a part of the executive staff at Masjid Muhammad. I sat on all our boards. I was in the interworking of all of our developments. I understand from a practical perspective of what Bathsheba is talking about. I would go so far, and I don't like to tell people what to do. I've grown past that, alhamdulillah. But I would highly recommend that these five questions, you sit down with your organization, your board members, whoever you're working with on your community service, and ask yourself, can you answer these five questions? And if not, I would make them the foundation of building, of inviting people on your board, inviting people on your nonprofit organization, because these five questions are consistent with the Quran and the Sunnah of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And I say that because, and then Bathsheba, I'm going to ask you to respond to what I'm saying. I say that because if you have legal documents that need to be read, you need to have a lawyer on your board. If you have medical, if your service that you're providing has to do with medical reasons, you need to have medical people on your board. You need to have qualified people in their line of expertise on your board, on your organization. And I have some other points I want to make, Bathsheba, but I want you to speak to that first because you and I sat on Masjid Muhammad's board together.
Yeah. Assalamu alaikum again. Couldn't agree more with Sister Fitra. I would say the critical skill sets you should be thinking about for a board would definitely include legal expertise, finance, / accounting expertise would be two critical areas. And then influencers, ambassadors, people that you know are passionate and connected to the mission. But also individuals who can help support your organizational capacity building efforts through fundraising, right? So either they themselves have resources that they can draw from, and they also have other individuals that they're connected to that they can bring in to support the work as well. So I do think those are some critical areas. And I would also think about your constituencies. Oftentimes, diversity is also an important piece for the board. Oftentimes, when I'm doing grant applications these days, foundations in particular are asking about board demographics. How many women, how many people of color, et cetera. I mean, I don't think that people of color part is going to be as much of an issue for us, but they do want to understand the degree of diversity, right? And I think for us, we have to think about diversity a little bit different because, our organizations are already led by us. So we want to draw in other constituents as well. I would say that. But no, that's a critical point you made, Sister Fitra.
Okay. And now I want to go back to your other slide where this money is donated. So on this point, I want to just say, if you set your organizations up with these questions in mind, you will be making good choices, inshallah. And that way you don't have to go back and reorganize yourself in order to be qualified. No, let me say this, because these questions will guide you to make very good decisions. Okay, go to the slide of where these monies go. Now, you see at the three top, there's none greater on this planet Earth than us at providing religious services, providing education, and providing human services. And so these are the three top categories where funding is being provided. Bathsheba, please speak to that.
Absolutely. I mean, again, reflecting on the work that we do at Masjid Muhammad, we definitely touch education. I mentioned our weekend school. I see dear Sister Katara on the line. She is our, executive director of the weekend school and, our coordinator, et cetera, extraordinaire. But yeah, so education is certainly high on the list. We have a lot of needs in our communities as we even think about the learning loss that's occurred in recent years owing to the COVID-19 pandemic. There are a lot of students that unfortunately were left behind in terms of learning loss, et cetera, in the pandemic. And so those are things that we definitely should be thinking about. And human services, again, thinking about Masjid Muhammad, we have food programs, we have other human services, senior programs that we provide as well. So yeah, absolutely. These are critical areas and there is no surprise, a lot of philanthropic dollars that go to supporting organizations that do this work. But again, I would caution us to think about what sets our organizations apart from those already doing the work. Because in some cases, some cities have 5, 6, 7 food programs. So, unless there's a gap that needs to be met, that, you are uniquely, you know, serving, your, you know, meeting, if you will, then, you know, again, I would think about whether or not, you know, your best sort of your best positioned, if you will, around that. But yeah, absolutely. You should have done the presentation because you're doing a great job.
Yeah, no, but the kind of money that is designated to religion, education, and human services is, look at the kind of money that we are not tapping into at all, and we have been providing these services for umpteen centuries. And so we're good at this. And so, yes, if they use your five questions and the formula in your slide presentation, they could then see themselves more qualified solicit these funds. And then the last question or example I'm going to use is our health committee just partnered with a Christian foundation organization to do an annual fund. And we had as one of our main sponsors, CVS. And that was because of the number of people that a visibility. Bathsheba, speak to that regarding a very, very successful first annual walk.
So unfortunately, I did not participate in the walk, but I will say that our health committee, we do have an amazing health committee at Masjid Muhammad, and they've been doing some really critical work in our communities, everything from health screenings to, you know, building partnerships with other faith communities, et cetera. So I'm not, I did participate early on in some conversations with CVS, so it's great to hear that that went forward. But yeah, we do have, I will say, a very, very strong health committee.
Well, let me say it was very successful. But I was speaking more to the fact that they were able to attract CVS as a main sponsor because of the points that you outlined that qualified them to approach CVS.
Yeah.
And so I do know that the success of that was in following the formula that you have said, that you have presented here, that allowed them to even sit at the table with CVS. Mm-hmm. And CVS didn't want, their main interest was the visibility, mm-hmm. the funding that they gave us to order t-shirts, to give away the water, to put up a tent, the many advantages that their funds allowed us, the service that their funds allowed us to provide. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just bring more of a hands-on understanding to what you're saying, because I want people on this line to understand that we at Masjid Muhammad are using the formula that you have outlined in order to achieve the success that they read about, they know about, the building that we're putting up, the funding that we receive, mm-hmm. that this is achievable. So in your last words, and because we sat on a board together, we both know mm-hmm. that these expectations that you have provided are achievable, and Kathy will show us in her presentation. Please, your last words.
Last words, I would say one of the things that stands out to me in terms of the success that Masjid Muhammad has had is the relationships that we've built, right?
Yeah.
So our imam, Imam Talib Sharif, our board, yeah. other members of our community, we do, you know, a really good job of leveraging relationships. I even think of work that we're doing in the weekend school with a Jewish community here in Washington, Hill Havera, as one example. We just received a grant through one of our a community member, former Masjid Muhammad board member as well. And we're going to be doing some peace building work with, again, a Jewish community and a Christian community here in D.C. So those partnerships are really important. I think I did talk a little bit about that in one of the other slides. And if I'm not mistaken, the CVS relationship also came about as a result of relationships that Imam Sharif has built here in D.C., interfaith relationships. And so I think that relationship, the CVS partnership happened as a result of that work as well. So,
And you're right. And it also was because we have a phenomenal health committee, a health team that was able to negotiate, discuss, and solidified the partnership between us and CVS. So it's really a conglomerate of contributions and expertise and dedication from the membership that makes all of this possible. So Bathsheba, with that, I wanna say thank you very much. I do wanna tell everyone that this slide presentation will be in the newsletter this coming Saturday, and you can look at it. Bathsheba, could you please share an email with the community if they have any follow-up questions that they could email you? And again, if you need to get in touch with Bathsheba, I can also send you her her email if you don't get it off the line. Bathsheba, thank you very, very much. It is a pleasure and an honor. Women rock. That's all I can say.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Bathsheba. So next, our second speaker is Kafi. Sister Kafi, are you with us? Yeah.
Yes, I'm here.
Well, Kafi and I, Bathsheba and I work together, just as for the listeners, on the board and the developments of many projects, along with Kafi at Masjid Muhammad. There's a lot of great people at Masjid Muhammad. And I can't stress that teamwork makes the dream work. That's my motto. Kafi, she and I have an extended relationship that we worked as the executive team for 10 years together, and I always tell her that we're bonded by love and purpose, because it took a lot for us. It was because of our relationship with Albert Sabir, who's not on the line, Imam Talib. It was the four of us for many, many, many years, and we had lots of knockdown, drag out conversations. And we stuck in there, and when I see her, I'm sorry, my heart pounds, and I feel the same way about Bathsheba. I mean, she brought her expertise to Masjid Muhammad, and she shared everything she had and led us in the right direction in setting up our organizations. We used her formula to set our organizations up, and so we didn't have to go back and redo our work. We made good decisions up front, and those decisions that weren't so good, because we made good decisions, it allowed us to recover from them without loss. But without going any further, Kafi is going to bring us, Kafi, before you show your slide presentation, please if you want, whatever you want to share about your expertise at Masjid Muhammad or the community in Philadelphia that you're from, please do. But Kafi is going to bring us the practical side of and show us how a grant is completed. Thank you for being here, Kafi.
Thank you. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. My name is Kafi Knox McDowell. I am currently the CFO at Masjid Muhammad. My expertise is actually in accounting. But of course, in a small environment, you learn all types of things. So I've been doing grant writing. Most of my experience is in the not-for-profit field, from education to trade organizations to normal nonprofit environments. So I'm just going to jump in and get started with the conversation.
Please, inshallah. Please.
All right, the fundamentals of completing a grant application. The first part, when you're approaching completing a grant application, you have to do a lot of thought work. Some of these things Bathsheba has already covered in her conversation. So you want to make sure you develop your specific meaningful actionable plan for what it is that you want to do and why. You want to consider how your plan is going to achieve those positive results. You want to locate granting organizations that funds projects like the ones that you want to fund. You want to research and make sure that they align with your mission and vision of your organization. You also want to make sure that you review the organization guidelines. That's very, very important because those nuanced factors can put you out of being able to qualify for a specific grant. This part is important. Sample grant proposals. As I write grant proposals, sometimes it's helpful to go online and research different types of grant proposals in that specific arena so you can be able to grab some of the language that's utilized in that particular field that you're looking into. So it's research in that particular part is very important as well. How do you establish your credibility? Some of those things they spoke about in the last presentation, as you move forward, those things that you already are doing. So a lot of Sister Fisher talked about those things that we already do in our communities, human services, food services. Think about those things in your community that you're already doing, because then you already come to the table with something that you've already established. So a lot of grantors want to make sure that this is something that you already are doing, you already have been doing as an organization, and that they're just supplementing what you're doing. There are some capacity building grants, just as Bathsheba talked about, whereas, you know, they're just trying to build up something that you already have in place, but it's, you know, kind of like startup type of assistance. Make sure that your plan is clear and logical. Make sure you're heading. All of the information that you're proposing is succinct. You don't want to have a whole bunch of words in your actual proposal. You want to keep it to the point. And the expectations for the grant. So at the end, they want to know, what is the end game? After we give you this money, what are we going to see at the other end of this particular granting period? Okay, so examination of your need or problem. Normally, they're asking you about what kind of gaps in that particular area that you're going to be responding to. They're going to ask about your knowledge and how you have addressed these particular issues from your standpoint. You want to establish your context of the problem. And if you have data, make sure that you have that. Now, your data is very important. And from going through the grants that we've been a part of, that data piece is very, very important to be able to have that information of how you affected and who you are affecting as you go through your actual granting period. You need to make sure that you find a way to be able to document that, because in your granting application, they're going to ask that. So at the end, they want to have actual statistical data to say, okay, I've helped this many people doing thus and so, thus and so. The description of your project. So each grant has requests for you to have a project narrative. So you're telling them exactly what you're doing for your particular grant, what are the goals of your project, what are your outcomes. SMART goals, specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. Though that's very, very important. It's an evaluation tool for you to be able to look at what it is that you're presenting and saying that what you're going to do as the recipient of the grant as you actually work through the process. So as you as you go through the process of actually writing up the grant, you want to make sure that you have that in mind. What is specific? You want to have something that's specific that you're trying to achieve. How are you going to measure to say what it is that you're doing is actually being effective? So you want to make sure that it's measurable. Is it achievable? Like, are your goals too high or too low? So you want to make sure that whatever you're doing, that you can actually achieve those goals and that they're realistic and on time. So you have a grant period in order to actually finish the grant. So you want to make sure that as you are going through to actually write out your grant, you want to make sure that you are your timeline and your milestones are consistent. How are you going to achieve those outcomes? What types of people do you need in order to be successful in what it is that you're trying to do? Do you need an accountant? How many volunteers do you need? What other kind of resources do you need to make this actually come to fruition? At the end, I'm going to show an actual grant that we've written and that we've continued to receive, because it asks these kind of questions and it's orderly. And in addition to that, it'll make this part of the presentation a little more real for you. How can you be sure that your project will be productive, respond or need to the problem that you have identified? So you want to make sure that you can be able to communicate that inside of your project. As well, we talked about the timeline already, to make sure that it is clear and concise and that you're able to achieve it within the period in which you're given to be able to complete the actual grant. Budget. Okay. So when you're asking for funding, the budget is very, very important. And when you're actually creating your budget needs to create, it should be connected to your narrative. So those things that you're saying you're going to do in the narrative, you should be able to tie down those things in your narrative to dollars. I will show you how that actually looks like. Most funders they want you to be very, very succinct. So if you have somebody coming on as a coordinator, you want them to do 35 hours, and you're paying them $10 an hour. They want you to actually be very descriptive in which you are saying that this person is actually a part of your budget. So you want to make sure that it's very concise what it is that you're presenting to them. Some organizations require a cover letter, so they want to know who you are. Some funders would like to know who is on your board. What types of expertise do you have on your board? Bathsheba talked about a little earlier. You should have a nice mix of individuals on your board, because they're looking at that to see if you're going to be able to properly administer the grant through the people that you have around you at the table. Organizational qualifications. Of course, we talked about that, that you're a nonprofit, and that your organization is a viable organization to be able to actually administer the grant. Supporting documentation, they may ask for bios, they may ask for resumes. You want to make sure that you have your organizational documents in place, 501c3, bylaws. Most grants ask you for the letter of good standing. So in each state, they have a documentation letter of good standing that say, hey, this person has been paying their taxes or providing their reporting on time. So they want to make sure that the funders want to make sure that you're consistent and on point with your own internal affairs. Your taxes, have they been paid? You know, all of those things are key to you being able to receive that funding from institutions. Okay, my grand example, we have been doing the Islamic Relief. This is one of our partners. We've had a partnership with them, I want to say over 15 years now. We've made a solid relationship with them. Actually, this particular institution has been looking for people in our community to tag into, to connect with, in order to bring more African-American Muslims into their circle. So you may want to look into it, you know, from the standpoint of your own specific communities, because this is the opportunity that, especially for communities that give away food. A lot of the this particular grant we utilized for food giveaways. So we had the turkey giveaway, Qurbani, and the Ramadan food box giveaway. And the grant that I'm about to present to you all is the Ramadan food box giveaway. Just give me 1 second so I need to share another screen. So I'm showing this to show that it's not too, this is not, this particular grant is not too intimidating. Some grants can be very, very technical, but this particular organization, they want to make sure that smaller organizations will have opportunities to actually be able to apply to their programming and be able to take advantage of it. Now, this is a builder. So if you have these smaller grants that you apply to, you can build up your reputation in that particular area through that, and then it'll show that you could be able to actually manage a grant because there's a reporting factor at the end that you could be able to go and report back to a funder. So funders, they like to see that you're going through the entire cycle and that you could handle that, as a, especially for the smaller institutions. So organizations like this that give opportunity to smaller organizations are key, because if you have a lot of smaller grants, when it's time to do a larger grant, it'll show that you have that consistency. So in this particular case, this is the Ramadan grant. In this particular grant, this allows us to actually give away food during the month of Ramadan. Masjid Muhammad normally uses it for our iftars. So we give away food for iftar. During the pandemic, we did drive-through iftars, and now this actually helped us during the course of the Ramadan period. We also split it sometimes to be able to go and feed the homeless as well. So here they ask for your name, your 501c3 information, your tax ID number. So here we actually stated what our project is and what it is that we want to do. Normally, when it comes to operational and administrative costs, most organizations only give you 15 to 20% of your grant in order to facilitate your administrative costs for your grant. But the rest of the grant, you're able to pay for whatever food you're going to pay for. You'll also be able to pay for any kind of staffing that you need to be able to facilitate that grant. Now, this is just an outline of our specific project. So for our project, in this particular one, we provided food pantry items in a box. So we had to actually be very descriptive about what items that we want to put in the box. Before they weren't as descriptive. So that's what I'm saying, that the environment is changing for some of these institutions. They want more information and more succinct information. So I couldn't just say we're just providing food boxes. They wanted me to be very detailed about what I'm putting in this specific box. And then when I pull up the budget, you'll see that I had to cost out how much it actually cost for those items to be in that box. So they are very, very detailed on what the requirement was for this specific grant. Okay. Food pantry, just the same information. The grant amount request, the budget template. The budget, I'm going to go to the budget in a moment. They want to know the total amount of food that you provide. When is your pantry? What is the start and end date? What date or is it operational? And where are you going to be actually distributing that information, that's the food. Now, another part to this specific grant is when Bathsheba talked about visibility. So this particular grantor, they want to make sure that they have visibility. So they want you to have the media out there. They will bring the media to you. So you want to make sure that you take pictures, even for yourself. You want to get types of signage if you can, but you want to be able to make yourself a institution that, okay, when I need to get something to eat, if I need to get some food, I know I could go to Masjid Muhammad. I know they have food pantry on this day. So you want to make sure that you take media information, take pictures, put it on your social media if you can. So that's also a part of that process that I would urge people to do if you're going to embark on these type of grants. Okay, here's the description of our pantry. So they want to know who you're going to serve. This is what we talked about earlier, who you're going to serve. So in our particular instance, low-income families, seniors on fixed income, and other high need populations. They also ask you how are you going to integrate it. So in this particular instance, we wrap it around with our other food programs so that we could be able to facilitate the program. So it's a supplemental thing for us. We already have our SHARE program. So this is a supplemental grant that allows us to provide more food to the community. Another key thing in that part is partnerships. So with our funding from the Islamic Relief, we're able to, not just Islamic Relief, we have another partnership with El Hibri as well, El Hibri Foundation. With that particular partnership, we're able to actually give food to other people, in addition, have partnerships. So we don't just give food to our community. We reach out to approximately three other senior housing spaces in our particular vicinity in Washington, D.C. So we're connecting. So that's dawah. So we're able to connect with other communities, and they know that, okay, Master Muhammad is going to bring this food on this day. So it's allowing you to have more of a reach. And then when people know that you're doing that, you'll have opportunities for other things. That's how we got into the Key Bar program, which was with a connection with the city, where our seniors get lunch every day. So lunch is served every day for free at Masjid Muhammad between a certain time for our seniors. And it's funded by the government. So that grant was able to piggyback on the grants that we already had. So you have more opportunity to do both at the same time. So you're connecting with other individuals, other opportunities. So you could be more open to other grants. So we talked about our target population. So this is outlined here, seniors, 55 and older, low-income individuals, and our client selection. So you need to have a selection process on how you actually say these people qualify for the funding, for the grant that we're going to give to the individuals. So in our particular instance, we utilize rent, utilities, and it's like an income verification. In some instances, all they want is the person's name and their and how many people who are in their particular household. So we still try to keep the anonymity of the individuals intact as we are trying to gather the actual funding or grant, the actual information from the recipients. The proposed number of people that we received, where we're trying to affect on our program, 950 people, family size, 1 to 5 members, and then monitor and evaluation plan. So that, this is where your SMART goals come into effect. So we want to make sure that what we're doing is measurable, is specific, is realistic, and that we could be able to report out how many people are being affected and what demographic of people are being affected through our program. You have your point of contact. So I'm gonna just show a picture of the actual budget. So this is what the budget worksheet looks like for this particular grant. So we said we were going to give hot meals and food boxes, and this is where I was talking about the food boxes. They're asking you how much poundage of food is going to be in each box. So they want very, very detailed amount, and it flows over to whatever the cost is, and then actually the contribution. So in this case, this total grant period is being